titles appear over a vast field of cotton. A painted house. In an old pickup truck, a gray-haired mustached man drives with a brown-haired boy.
It was early in September, 1952. The Cardinals were 5 games behind the Dodgers, and the season looked hopeless. The cotton, however, was waist-high, and my father and Pappy could be heard whispering words that were seldom spoken. It could be a good crop. Highway 135 ran straight and flat through the farm country of the Arkansas Delta. On both sides, as far as I could see, the fields were white with cotton. Pappy, my grandfather, drove 37 miles per hour. His theory was that every automobile had a speed at which it ran most efficiently, and through some vaguely defined method, he had determined that his old truck should go 37.
On and off.
More titles. Scott Glenn as Eli. Arisha Barakis as Kathleen.
It was time for the harvest, a wonderful season for me because they turned out school for 2 months. For my grandfather, though, it was a time of endless worry.
More titles. Robert Sean Leonard as Jesse, Melinda Dillon as Gran, and Logan Lerman as Luke. Executive producer Richard Walsh. Teleplay by Patrick Sheehan Duncan, based on the novel by John Grisham, directed by Alfonso Arau. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Nikki Zada, Dutch Priest, Carrie Danahy, and Justin Soule. Read by Lynn McLean. Now the pickup truck drives into a town. Now at a crossroad.
In Pappy's opinion, this was the best spot in the county to catch the hill people. I wasn't so sure. We'd been trying to hire some for a week with no results.
As the boy plays catch with his mustache grandfather, a rusted truck with an open trailer pulls up. 4 older children lie languidly on mattresses in the truck bed and trailer. The vehicle parks, and a portly man gets out. He takes off his hat, scratches his balding head, and walks toward the older man. A weathered blonde woman steps out of the passenger side. The portly man smiles at the mustached man.
Howdy.
Good afternoon.
My name's Sproul.
Eli Chandler. Nice to meet you. Y'all looking for work?
Yep.
Where are you from?
Eureka Springs.
Yeah, I'm looking for field hands.
How much you paying?
$160, $100.
Mr. Sproul walks over to his wife.
Y'all wants to give us $160.
I think we should take it.
You think?
Sproul steps back to Eli.
What kind of cotton?
Stoneville. Bowls are ready. Be easy to pick.
Well, we made $160 last year.
It was the same.
The brown-haired boy walks over to the trailer.
What's your name? Luke.
Sorry, can't.
It's yours. Callie. How old are you?
10.
Yep.
How old are you?
17.
How long you been riding that trailer?
Day and a half. This is Trot. He ain't right.
Nice to meet you, Trot.
The gangly blonde boy glances warily at Luke. Later, an overhead view shows the rusted truck and trailer traveling on the dirt road. Eli and Luke watch as it drives off. Alongside the road, hundreds of cotton rows stretch diagonally across the vast field. Now, in a town, a truck pulls in with a large red trailer filled with dark-haired men wearing straw hats. Nearby, in a general store, Luke walks up to the counter. Beside the cash register, a plump woman smiles at him as the boy takes a candy from a jar. She watches as he writes on a piece of paper.
Your penmanship's getting better, Luke. Where's your grandfather?
Across the street checking on the Mexicans.
Y'all using hill people too?
Yep. Just found some.
A Mexican man enters the store.
Buenos dias, senor.
Buenos dias.
Luke faces the clerk.
Last year, Juan talked to some Mexican. Eli's worried about paying them too much.
Your grandfather worries about everything.
He's a farmer.
Are you going to be a farmer?
No, ma'am. Baseball player.
For the Cardinals?
Of course.
The plump clerk smiles broadly at Luke. Outside, Eli talks with a chubby Mexican wearing a goatee. The farmer points and walks across the street to his truck. The chubby man and 6 others follow him. As they climb into Eli's truck bed, Luke steps over. He smiles at a tall, handsome man wearing a cowboy hat.
Buenos dias, señor.
The man glares, then gets into the truck. Later, Eli drives his truck down a 2-lane highway. In the truck bed, the tall Mexican sits on the edge of the railing with one hand on his hat and the other on the railing. In the cab, Luke and his grandpa smile. Later, they turn off the highway and onto a dirt road. The truck stops in front of a wooden house with a red barn. As a campfire burns, the Spruills set up tents and a campfire in front of the house. Luke gets out of the car and glances over at the campsite. A tall, brown-haired young man glowers at him. As Luke faces his grandfather, a slender, blonde woman wearing an apron emerges from the house and stands on the front porch.
I thought you told them to sit up behind the barn.
I did.
They set up right on my baseball field.
An older woman steps onto the porch.
They finally got the Mexicans.
7 of them.
Yes, ma'am.
That's good.
What are those people doing in our front yard?
I asked them to sit up behind the barn. I don't know why they picked that spot.
Can you ask them to move?
I cannot. They pack up, they'll leave. You know how hill people are. Say good morning, muchachos.
As the Mexicans follow Eli, the blonde faces Luke.
Going out to the fields until your dad's supper's almost ready.
From the porch, Luke watches his grandpa and the men head toward the barn. The young boy turns and looks at the Spruill's campsite. Tally meets his gaze. Sunlight shines on her shoulder-length golden brown hair. The skinny teenager puts her hands on her hips as she looks at the boy. Later in the barn, the men settle into the open space. In a loft area, one man lights white candles around a religious shrine. Nearby, the handsome Mexican man strums a guitar. Luke's mother approaches the barn door with a basket of produce. The chubby man meets her.
It's very nice, very clean.
It is, isn't it?
She glances in the barn, then hands him the basket.
The garden's full, and I'll bring you a basket every other day. Y'all don't have to pay for it. It's just part of the deal.
Gracias, señora.
Now by the barn, Luke rides on a bicycle with a man.
As I rode back from the fields, holding onto my father, his shirt and overalls were soaked with sweat, but his arms were like steel.
They get off the bike as Luke's mother approaches.
My mother was waiting for us by the water pump. She had grown up in a house full of girls and had been raised in part by a couple of old prissy aunts. I think they had bathed more than farm people, and her passion for cleanliness had rubbed off on my father. I got a complete scrubbing every Saturday afternoon, whether I needed it or not.
Luke sits on the porch and watches his parents at the water pump. As his father takes off his hat and shirt, his mother wrings water from a towel. She steps over to her husband, wipes his bare back, then stands in front of him. Luke's father looks up at his wife, and she runs her fingers through his hair. As she lowers herself onto his lap, he puts his hat on her head. They hug and kiss. On the porch, Luke smiles, then gets up and walks into the house. Nighttime. Eli walks across the driveway to the front porch. He steps onto the porch, where Luke sits with his parents and grandmother. They listen to a radio.
No Cardinals game. Rained out.
Rain.
Nothing to worry about. It's all the way up in St. Louis.
Shh. Luke's grandmother turns up the radio.
They will meet again September 12. In related news, Chinese troops hit Bunker Hill east of Panmunjom in 2 small feeler actions as 9 other enemy groups probed along the 8th Army front.
Artillery it's all right. He'll be home before you know it.
Grand smiles at Luke. The young boy looks up at his grandfather.
No bad news.
Later in the house, Luke lies in bed, smiling at the ceiling. A ripped-out magazine page sticks to the wooden boards overhead. On it, a red baseball jacket, shirts, and caps are shown. The ad reads, "The National Baseball League, St. Louis Cardinals, boys' jackets, knit shirts, caps, sizes 6 to 18. Outside Luke's bedroom window, his parents sit on the porch.
If our luck holds out, we can expect, what, to break even this year?
That's the goal. Breaking even's not a bad thing. We don't want for anything.
What about the debt you and your daddy are carrying from previous years?
Luke peeks out through his window.
We owe $2,000 to the gin for 51. We owe the John Deere dealer, Jonesboro, for parts. Co-op for seed and supplies. And Watson's for groceries. I know the situation.
Someday it'll be different. I'll own my own land.
free and clear.
And how different will it be, Jesse?
Luke's mother stares with a furrowed brow. Jesse glances at her, then gazes off. In Luke's room, the young boy moves away from his window. Morning. In the cotton field, the family and workers stand amidst shoulder-high plants bursting with white puffs. A green tractor and large trailer sit in the middle of the field. Luke wears a large satchel strapped over his shoulder as he picks cotton tufts from branches on the plants. His mother and Mr. Sproul work side by side. The tall, brown-haired young man works behind Jesse. Nearby, Mrs. Sproul wears a green bonnet as she bends over and picks cotton. Wearing a red bonnet, Tally sneaks over to Luke.
Daddy, how you doing?
Okay.
They sit on the ground.
I'm getting myself a Colonel's jacket.
Oh, yeah?
Colonel Red. It's shiny good. Cost $7.50. In 10 days, I'll pick enough to get it.
That's real nice.
Luke!
The boy jumps up.
Yeah?
What are you doing?
I had to take a pee.
Keep up now.
Yes, sir.
Tally giggles and sneaks away. Later, at the green trailer, the chubby worker hooks a bag of cotton on a pole. Eli weighs it.
52. No pie address. 52.
The worker smiles, takes the bag down, and puts it into the trailer.
Right, lunch!
Luke looks over at a truck. In the bed, Tally and her mother fan Trot. Luke stares with wide eyes. Jesse steps over to his son and puts his arm around the boy's shoulder.
How the heat got him.
They walk past them. Luke notices the handsome Mexican worker in the cowboy hat lifting Tally onto a truck.
Thank you.
Sitting in the back of the truck, the tall young man glares at the worker as he walks off. The young man shakes his head, then shoots Tally a look. They all move across the acres of cotton, back toward the house. Later, by the barn, Trot lies in the shade. Tally, her parents, and Luke's mother watch over him. Luke's mother walks over to her son, who sits on a swing, eating. Nearby, a windmill stands tall in the blue sky. She kneels down in front of her son.
Luke, we'd like you to stay with Trot up here at the house for the rest of the afternoon. And if he takes a turn for the worse, y'all just come out to the lower 40 and fetch one of the Sprouls.
Well, what about my Colonel jacket?
She smiles, stands up, and gazes out at the field.
There's 80 acres of cotton out there. I guess we could save you a little bit.
Luke shrugs. Later, Eli drives the tractor toward the field. Luke's family and the workers sit in the attached open trailer. Luke walks over to Trot, who lies on a blanket by the barn with a towel on his forehead. He sits down beside the blonde boy.
Trot, are you okay?
I guess.
The blonde boy sits up. Luke stands and takes a few steps away. Gazing at the departing trailer, he looks at Tally and smiles.
Does Tally like baseball?
Trot averts his gaze and slumps back down onto the ground. Still smiling, Luke watches the tractor move across the cotton field. Later in the field, the workers deftly pick through the plants. With quick-moving hands, the Mexicans stuff their bags. The handsome worker in the cowboy hat wears a tank top. Sweat glistens on his copper-colored skin. A rosary hangs from his neck. The noonday sun beams harshly on the diligent workers. In the field, the tall young man pauses and wipes his brow. The handsome Mexican worker glances over at Tally. Mr. Sproul knits his brow as he slides his hat off his head. Back at the barn, Luke wears a baseball mitt and tosses a baseball into a wooden bucket. Trot watches and laughs. Luke smiles at the blonde boy, then pitches another ball. The tall young man approaches the boys, glaring at Luke. As Luke stares innocently at him, the man sits down.
Picked 300 pounds. Then the heat got me.
Chewing some food, he scowls at Luke.
Fetch me some water, boy.
Sir?
Fetch me some water.
Trot lifts his brow and looks at Luke, who reaches for a pitcher.
Cold water, boy. From the house. And hurry. I've been working all day, you ain't.
With his baseball mitt in hand, Luke runs toward the house. Inside the kitchen, green beans, baby red potatoes, yams, and onions sit in bowls on the counter. Luke gets a bottle of water from the refrigerator and takes a glass from a cabinet. He turns around as a young man walks into the kitchen. Luke looks at the man, then pours water into the glass. His lower lip trembles slightly as he hands it to the stranger. The man gulps it down.
Give me another glass. You got anything to eat? Do you?
No.
The man stares angrily at him.
You mean no, sir, don't you, boy?
No, sir.
The man licks his lips and grabs an apple from the counter.
You farm people are right uppity, you know that?
Trot peers into the window. The man bites the apple and moves across the room.
Think you're better than us hill folk because you have this land, because you pay us to work it.
Bending over the stove, he picks up a ladle from a saucepan, tastes its contents, and faces Luke.
We're just one notch above them wetbacks, ain't we, boy? Just a bunch of hillbillies. Ain't that right, boy?
The man takes a bite from a biscuit, then scans the simply decorated living room.
We got a house nicer than yours, boy. A lot nicer. It's bigger. Got a long front porch. And you know what else it's got? You ain't gonna believe this, but our house has got paint on it. White paint. You ever see paint, boy?
The man spots Trot in the window and grins. He returns his gaze to Luke and bends down to his eye level.
Why don't you sawbusters paint your houses? Stop it, I!
Staring at the man, Luke takes a few steps backward, then runs toward the door. The boy stops at the door and glances back at Hank before he runs outside. Hank chuckles, takes another bite of the biscuit, and opens the refrigerator door. Evening. Luke and his family sit on their porch listening to the radio.
Stay on up.
No, ma'am. Slaughter.
That's an E5 ball to right center. It might be out of here. No. It's up for center field. Three. One run. Two runs will score. And here comes Stanky. They're waving him in for number three. The throw to the plate. He slides. He's safe. Stanky is safe. And Slaughter will make it safely in the third.
Be right back, Paul.
Luke glances over at the Sproul's campsite as Tally casually moves away from it. He intently watches the teenager, who steps onto the dirt road. Tally looks at Luke and motions with her head. He glances at his family, then gets up and walks over.
Trot told me about what Hank said. What he did. You tell your daddy?
Didn't tell no one.
He leans against a tree trunk alongside Tally.
You scared?
No. My pappy would take a stick to Hank. He's got a mean streak my granddaddy has.
Why then?
Because if pappy punishes Hank, you folks will pack up and move down the road to another farm. We'll be left short-handed. That's why.
Tally faces Luke and smiles.
You're smarter than I thought.
She touches the tip of his nose.
Well, if it means anything, I'm sorry about what Hank done and said.
Tally rubs Luke's arm, then walks off. The young boy dreamily smiles as he watches her leave, then touches his nose. Later, he walks back to the porch.
Mama? Mm-hmm. Ever think of painting the house?
Foolishness.
It costs too much.
Luke, someday we'll have a house with indoor plumbing and shrubs around the porch and with paint on the boards. Maybe even brick.
Luke smiles and nods. Morning. The orange sun rises above the horizon. Later in the field, the workers drag bags of cotton to the green trailer. Piles of the fluffy white fibers sit in the cart. As the workers unload their pickings into the trailer, Trot lies on the ground.
12 o'clock. Quitting time.
Luke faces the handsome worker.
On Saturdays, we'll take a half day. Just a half day today. And someday, we can go to the movies.
I understand. I don't need a movie. I need all the work I can get.
Luke looks at his father.
On Saturdays, we work half day. Sundays, we don't work at all. We observe the Sabbath.
Luke looks from his father to the man as the two men stare at each other.
On Saturdays, we work half day.
Jesse gestures to the man's bag. The Mexican takes off the bag and hands it to Jesse. Now in town, people socialize and shop.
Town on Saturday afternoon was very busy. All the farmers and all their families were loading up on supplies, talking weather and trading gossip.
Luke, his mother, and grandmother leave a store.
Hey, buenos dias.
His mother smiles at some of the workers. They put grocery bags into the bed of the truck, then walk to its cab. His grandmother sits in the passenger seat, and Luke's mother hands him some coins.
Okay, so 5 cents for the matinee, 5 cents for double cola, 3 cents for popcorn.
That there's an advance against your picking earnings. You got to pay that back.
Yes, ma'am.
Luke's mother winks at him, then kisses his cheek.
Bye. Bye, Mom.
Later, outside a movie theater, a long line of people crowd the sidewalk. The marquee reads, Roy Rogers. Luke stands at the ticket booth as a boy runs up to the crowd.
There's a fight behind the co-op.
Luke and a handful of other kids follow the boy. Now behind the co-op, a small crowd of adults and children watch two men fight. A short-haired man punches a shaggy-haired man in the gut. Luke and another kid push toward the front of the crowd.
Brothers.
The shaggy-haired man knocks the other man to the ground.
Told ya. Who's that?
Don't know. Probably Little Billy.
A clean-cut man holds the shaggy-haired man.
Come on, Jay! Come on! Let's go!
Hank steps in.
That ain't fair. Fight like a man.
Hank throws Jared against some haystacks. As the shaggy-haired man runs away, Hank slams his fist into the clean-cut guy. Behind him, Jared grabs a large rock. Hank throws the clean-cut man against a wall. Then Jared punches Hank with the rock. Spitting blood, Hank pounds his fists into Jared's back. Men cheer from the co-op's roof.
Hey, you stupid hillbilly! Let go of my brother!
A Cisco brother yells from the rooftop. Hank pulls him down, and the man hits his head against the ground as he lands. The clean-cut guy charges at Hank, who grabs him in a headlock, pulls Jared by his hair, and slams both men into a brick wall. In the crowd, Luke winces. The third brother gets up and runs at Hank, who throws a large metal drum at him, knocking him to the ground.
Anybody want more?
The crowd stares at Hank.
Come on! Come on, get you some!
Hank glares at the men on the rooftop, then grabs a 2x4 and approaches Jared. In the crowd, a man pushes Luke and the other boy away.
Come on, y'all don't need to see this.
Hank swings the board at Jared's face. The screen goes black. Now at Luke's house.
I awoke to the sound of rain and the tin roof sang under the torrents. My thoughts were on the fight. I wanted to tell my father, but then I did not want to be a witness.
Luke! Pappy says the rain's gonna stop in time for church.
As Gran sips coffee, Luke joins her on the porch.
What you want for breakfast?
Biscuits.
Then I'll make some biscuits.
She sits on the porch swing.
I had a dream last night about Ricky.
A good dream?
Yes, very good. I dreamed the war suddenly ended. They forgot to tell us. We were all sitting out here on the porch one night. And out there on that road, we saw a man running toward us. It was Ricky.
Luke sits beside her.
I wish I could have a dream like that.
Yeah, I think the Lord is telling us something.
Uncle Ricky coming home?
Yes. Maybe not right away, but the war will be ended soon. We'll look up and we'll see him walking across the yard there.
Fighting tears, she puts her arm around Luke.
Grandpa, I pray for Uncle Ricky every night.
Oh. Gran pulls Luke's head to her shoulder. Now at the end of a dirt road leading to a small clapboard church, a dark sedan parks behind Eli's truck. The women exit the truck wearing floral print cotton dresses and simple hats and head toward the church doors. Eli, wearing denim overalls and a clean white shirt, faces an approaching policeman. Jesse stands by him.
Oh, Stick, you're working on Sunday.
Crime don't seem to respect the Sabbath. One of them Cisco boys is dead.
Murder?
Good folks get murdered. When translate the Cisco's get killed.
Luke watches.
I'm still gonna investigate. You're gonna need to come out and speak to one of your hands.
I'll have to wait till after church. Some folks go to church.
I'm on duty.
Eli and Gran nod as they pass. The family enters the church. Now in a police car, Stick and a deputy drive down the road to the Spruill camp. Later, the sheriff and Eli face the family of laborers. On the lawn, Mr. Spruill sits on a chair with a banjo on his lap. His wife stands in front of their tent.
Had a big fight yesterday in town. A couple of local boys got into it with a fellow from the hills. One of them died this morning. Fractured skull.
Ain't none of us. We're peaceful folk.
Is that so? Y'all go into town yesterday?
We did.
Stick walks through the tent up to Mr. Spruill. Hank leans on a tree behind his father. Luke steps around the tent for a closer look.
We did.
You got a boy named Hank?
Mr. Spruill stiffly rests his jaw against his palm.
Maybe.
Don't play games with me. I ask you a question, you give me a straight answer. You got a big jail over in Jonesboro with a lot of room.
I'm Hank Spruill.
Did you go into town yesterday and get in a fight behind the co-op?
Nope. I stopped the fight. A couple fellas was beating up on a boy from the hills. I stopped it.
You use a piece of wood?
Didn't need to.
I asked you a question. Did you use a piece of wood?
Nope. They had a 2x4.
Well, I guess I better take you in.
Mr. Spruill stands and blocks Stick's path.
If he goes, we go.
Slow down, Stick. You and I both know Cisco's ain't good for nothing. They fight often, they fight dirty. Seems to me they just picked on the wrong fella. I got a body, Eli. You understand?
He was just breaking up a fight.
I heard after the fight was over, he picked up a piece of wood and beat the boys.
Frowning, Hank lumbers forward.
Now, I know two against one ain't fair. And I know it's the Cisco's. But I ain't sure one of them had to get killed.
I didn't kill nobody. I broke up a fight, and there was three of them, not two.
In a court in this country, convict three against one. That's if he's telling the truth.
Stick eyes Hank.
He's gonna need witnesses.
Little Chandler saw it.
Come here, Luke.
Luke ducks under the frayed tent rope and approaches Eli and the sheriff.
You see the fight?
Yes, sir.
What were you doing there?
Heard there was a fight.
Stick kneels, meeting Luke's gaze.
So I took off and watched it.
Tell me what you saw. And tell the truth.
That boy don't lie.
Jerry Cisco was fighting some man from the hills when Mr. Hank stepped in and helped the man from the hills. The first hill man, he left. I think he was hurt pretty bad.
Stick nods and Luke's gaze shifts briefly to Hank.
Then all of a sudden, Bobby Cisco charged from the crowd and attacked Mr. Hank. It was three against one. Just like Mr. Hank said.
That settles it. Who used the 2x4?
Tell him, boy.
Luke faces Hank and furrows his brow.
One of them Cisco boys picked up that stick of wood, didn't he?
Hank stares and Luke blinks nervously.
Didn't he, boy?
Eli walks up to Hank.
You watch yourself, boy.
As Hank meets Eli's stare, Stick stands.
Stick, you're scaring my boy to death. Must be a lot of people who saw this fight. Say, go bedevil them.
I'm going to keep asking around.
As Stick starts back toward the patrol car, Hank turns away.
And I might be back.
Now Jesse and Kathleen approach a tree. Boards nailed to the trunk form a ladder leading to a wooden platform. Luke sits on the platform and dangles his legs over the edge.
Luke, why don't you tell us about that fight?
I was scared, I guess.
Scared? Scared of what?
Scared of getting caught on the co-op watching fight.
Smiling, Jesse and Kathleen trade a glance.
Luke, I'm not too worried about you watching a fight. But keeping secrets and getting into trouble. You should have told us what you saw.
I saw a fight. Never knew Jared Siskel was going to die.
And you told Stick Powers the truth?
Luke furrows his brow.
Yes, sir.
One of them Sisko boys picked up that stick of wood? Or was it Hank Spruill?
Well, to be honest, Dad, things happen so fast. There's bodies falling and flying everywhere. Hank was throwing those boys around like they were little toys. The crowd was moving and hollering. Then I saw a stick of wood.
Luke, honey, little boys who keep secrets from their parents can get in big trouble. You can tell us anything.
Yes, ma'am.
Supper in an hour, okay?
Okay.
Jesse and Kathleen walk away. Nighttime. On the porch, the family listens as Gran reads.
Dear Mom and Dad and Jesse and Kathleen and Luke, I hope all is well at home. I never thought I'd miss cotton picking, but I sure wish I was home right now. I miss everything. The farm, the fried chicken, the Cardinals. Anyway, I'm doing fine over here. Things are quiet. We're not on the front anymore. My unit is 5 miles back, and nobody is shooting at us, and we're not shooting at anybody. I really think I'll be home soon. I got your last batch of letters, and they mean a lot to me. So keep writing. Gotta run. Love to all. Ricky.
Luke gazes at her and smiles briefly. Gran folds the letter, presses it to her chest, and rushes inside. Kathleen watches her go. Jesse and Eli trade a look, then glance away. Eli faces the family.
We won't be going to town Saturday.
Luke frowns.
Why not?
Because I say so.
You ain't afraid of the Siskos, are you?
Be best if the Spruills stay out of town for a while. I discussed it with Mr. Spruill, and we decided it'd be best to stay put on Saturday. Even the Mexicans.
Hey. I ain't afraid of nobody, son.
Luke meets his grandfather's gaze, then Eli smiles.
What you say to me?
Daytime. The windmill twirls in a gentle breeze. Below, blankets hanging from clotheslines encircle an iron water pump in a galvanized tub. Kathleen draws water. Shirtless, Luke peers into the tub and flicks his fingers as his mother adds a bucket of water.
I don't see why I gotta do this if we're not going to town.
She hands him soap.
I'll do it.
Behind a blanket, Eli averts his gaze.
I'm going to Pot and Pearls for a few things. You want to go, Luke?
Luke dabs his chest with a washcloth.
No, sir.
Luke keeps bathing.
Buy a cola.
No, thanks.
Eli nods and leaves. Kathleen approaches with the bucket.
Hey, no need to be just as stubborn as he is.
She touches his face, kisses him playfully on the cheek, then starts to leave. Suddenly, she lifts the bucket and drenches him. Grinning, they throw water at each other. Now, Luke and the workers play baseball.
After 5 days of endless labor and heat, and without the prospect of going to town, we all got together and played baseball. Cowboy pitched for the Mexicans, and was surprisingly good. He struck me out easily. I was humiliated, especially in front of Tally.
Tally steps up to the plate. Cowboy, the handsome Mexican worker, smiles and pushes up the brim of his hat.
Give it a whack, Tally. He ain't no pitcher.
He lobs a slow underhand ball. Tally swings and misses.
Oh, that's all right.
She eyes the pitcher.
Go, Tally, give it a ride.
Smiling, Cowboy lobs the ball and Tally hits a pop fly. Hank looks on. She slides into first base, a strip of corrugated aluminum siding.
When Tally got a hit, my humiliation, enormous, grew even greater.
Hank hits a foul through a house window.
Strike two.
The catcher, the chubby goateed man, glances from Cowboy to Hank.
Come on, Hank!
Cowboy winds up and burns a fastball across the plate. Hank strikes out and goes down on one knee.
Hank wasn't having any better luck than me against Cowboy. And when he struck out, I was glad my father was around.
Don't throw the bat. If you can't be a sport, then don't play.
Seething, Hank shifts his focus to Jesse. Later, Cowboy takes the bat and Hank pitches.
Luke squats, holding up a catcher's mitt.
It was now Hank's turn to pitch to Cowboy. He reached back for all the juice he could find and hurled a fastball directly at him.
The baseball slams into Cowboy's side. Hank spits and cockily eyes the batter. On the bench, Mr. Spruill leans back and laughs. Cowboy slings the bat at Hank's legs. He runs at Cowboy and throws him back. Cowboy pulls a knife and points it at Hank's face. The chubby Mexican restrains Cowboy.
Hey, put it down! Put it down! Fight like a man!
Nobody's fighting you. Miguel, get him back to the barn.
Come on, Hank.
Hank glances at Cowboy.
Kill that boy.
You've killed enough.
All right. Come on, Hank. Let's go. Come on.
We'll kill him.
You're an asshole.
Stay away from the barn, Hank.
Miguel holds Cowboy's wrist as they watch the Spruills head back to their camp in the front yard. Now in the chicken coop, Luke scatters feed as Tally approaches with a towel and tote bag. She grips the wire fence and faces him.
Will you do me a favor, Luke? Your grandma told my mom there's a creek close by we can bathe in. Do you know where it is?
Sellers Creek. About a half mile that way.
Tally wrinkles her nose.
Are there any snakes?
Maybe a little water snake or two. No cottonmouth.
Tally nods and glances away.
Well, will you go with me?
Why?
I don't know.
She shrugs and grins.
Make sure nobody sees me.
Are you scared?
Maybe. A little.
She heads off. Now they walk through shady trees and brush.
I'm real sorry about Hank. He's always causing trouble.
Did you see the fight?
The one in town? No. Was it awful?
Yeah, pretty bad. He beat those boys so bad. He beat them long after the fight was over.
Will you tell me the truth, Luke? Did he pick up that stick first?
Luke looks away.
Happened real fast.
They gaze down at the grassy path.
Has he ever killed anyone before?
Not that I know of. He went up north once, and he got into some trouble up there. But we never knew what happened.
They take a few more steps, then Luke points.
That's the best spot.
How deep is it?
Luke taps his neck.
About here.
Will you go on back up by the trail and make sure nobody's looking, okay?
Okay.
She heads off, glancing back at him.
Go on.
Okay.
His gaze lingers on her as he turns.
And Luke, no peeking, okay?
Of course not.
Tally heads toward the water, swinging her tote bag and glancing over her shoulder. Luke watches her, then heads toward the embankment. He walks down to a moss-covered tree on the edge of the creek and squats beside it. Luke gazes downstream and waits.
Luke!
Yeah?
Is everything clear?
Yep.
On the creek's edge, Tally's clothes lay on the ground. A few yards out, she stands in water up to her waist. As she washes her neck and shoulders, she casts sidelong glances up and down the creek. In a shady spot upstream, Luke watches, his blue eyes widening. The girl leans back and lowers her hair into the water. She straightens and squeezes the water from her wet hair. Luke continues to watch as Tally washes her arms with a bar of soap. Then he stands and heads back up the embankment. Tally casts a slight smile over her shoulder. Later, the creek reflects lush overhead branches. A rock penetrates the quiet current, sending out ripples. Luke throws another stone as Tally approaches from behind.
Thanks, Luke. I feel so much better.
As Tally dries her ears, Luke shoves his thumbs into his pockets and walks with her.
You saw me, didn't you, Luke?
Yes.
That's okay. I'm not mad.
You're not?
No. I guess it's only natural, you know? For boys to look at girls.
As they walk, she hugs him and smiles. Luke hesitantly slides his arm around her waist. Now on the farm, Eli parks his rusty truck in front of the house. Kathleen and Gran get out of the passenger side door, and Jesse leaps off the flatbed. As Luke stands and starts to follow his dad, he spots a shiny new teal Buick pull up the drive.
Someone's coming!
In the Buick, a couple wear sporty clothes. The driver gets out.
Hey, everybody. Look who's back.
Jimmy Dale? Why, it's Jimmy Dale.
Hi, Jimmy. We haven't seen you in ages.
How you doing? Hey, folks. This here is my bride, Stacy. She's from Michigan. This here is my uncle, Eli, and his son, my cousin, Jess. And that there is Gran and Kathleen, Jess's wife, and Kathleen's boy, Luke. I brung Stacy down to meet all the relatives.
I'm so pleased to meet you.
Some car, Jimmy.
Yep, it's brand new. Got it last week. Me and Stacy got married a month ago, and it's our wedding present.
Stacy and I got married, not me and Stacy.
Eli rolls his eyes, then checks out the sedan.
What is it? 52?
No, it's 53. Newest thing on the road. Built it myself.
You don't say.
Yeah, Buick lets us custom order our own cars, and then we get to watch them when they come down the line. I put the dashboard in this one.
How much did it cost?
Luke!
$2,700. It's no secret. Every dealer in the country knows how much they cost.
Jimmy Dale spots the Sprouls and folds his arms.
Hill people?
The ragged family stares back.
Yeah, Eureka Springs.
Why do they live like that?
How else could they live?
Can't you provide housing for them?
Anyway, Buick let us finance the cars for 24 months.
Gran brings a tray.
Sweet tea. Tea with ice.
Ew.
None for me.
Thank you.
Do you have any hot tea?
We don't drink hot tea around here.
Well, up in Michigan, we don't drink it with ice.
This ain't Michigan.
Stacy glares. Kathleen faces her.
Would you like to see my garden, Stacy?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Go on, sweetheart. Kathleen's got just about the prettiest garden in Arkansas.
I'll go with you.
The women walk away, and Eli approaches the driver's side door of the Buick.
Where in Pete's sake did you find her, Jimmy Dale?
She's a sweet girl, Eli.
Yeah.
Eli gets in behind the wheel, and Jimmy Dale slides in beside him.
She is a Yankee.
Yankees ain't so bad.
Luke gets him back.
Well, they're smart enough to avoid cotton. They make good money, and they build good schools. Stacy's family lives in a real nice house with indoor plumbing, a telephone, and television.
How's Luther?
He's doing real well. I got him on at the plant. He's making $3 an hour, 40 hours a week. Luther ain't never seen so much money. He was picking cotton for other people around here, making, what, $1,000 a year? Now he makes $6,000 a year, plus a bonus and retirement.
$6,000?
Yes, sir.
Luke, go check on your mama. Go on.
Luke gets out, closes the door, and heads toward the house. Eli eyes the pedals.
Where's the clutch?
Ain't got no clutch. It's automatic.
Now in the garden.
Yeah.
I don't think I inherited it. We seem to have a lot of green thumbs in my family. We get almost everything we eat out of here.
Luke steps between the rows.
It's amazing how much can provide for the wintertime, too.
Luke picks up a snake and brings it over.
Oh, look what you found. I think I really...
Stacy collapses into the string beans.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just a green one.
Later, Miguel carries Stacy to the porch with Kathleen.
Don't they have snakes up in Michigan?
They set the unconscious woman in a chair. Miguel removes his hat and fans her. Gran brings smelling salts and holds them under Stacy's nose. Stacy lurches.
Here.
Stacy's confused gaze darts between Kathleen and Gran.
I'll make some hot tea. I'll help you. Luke, you watch after Stacy.
As the boy fans her, Stacy eyes him suspiciously. Luke shifts his focus to the men peering under the Buick's hood.
I've never ridden in a car. We have a truck.
How old are you?
10 years old.
You're 10 and you've never ridden in a car.
He shrugs and shakes his head.
You ever seen a television?
In the catalogs.
Ever use a telephone?
No, ma'am.
Unbelievable. Do you go to school?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, thank heavens.
I just can't believe how backward you people are.
Here we are.
Gran brings a fancy china cup and saucer and hands it to Stacy. Stacy faces the men.
Jimmy Dale!
Jimmy Dale looks up from the engine, then trots to Stacy's side.
If we don't get going, we're gonna be late.
He gapes.
Oh, that's right.
She pulls him down and whispers into his ear.
She has to go to the bathroom.
Oh, come with me.
Kathleen ushers Stacy away, and Jimmy Dale takes his iced tea back to the Buick. In the backyard, as Kathleen leads the way to an outhouse, Stacy stops in her tracks.
You don't have indoor plumbing? Well, this is it.
Stacy hangs her shoulders and grimaces. Smiling, Kathleen opens the outhouse door. Shifting on her feet, Stacy throws down her arms.
I'll give you some privacy.
Kathleen walks away. Stacy stands with her hands on her hips, watching her go, then enters the little structure and shuts the door. From the porch, Luke watches with a mischievous smile. He approaches the outhouse and lifts his hand to the wall along the door jamb.
Stacy, it's me, Luke.
I'm occupied.
Well, don't come out right now. There's a big black snake out here.
Stacy's frantic shuffling shows through a crescent-shaped slit.
Be quiet. Otherwise, I'll know that you're in there.
Stacy peers out at the boy.
Do something.
I can't. He's big and he bites.
Get Jimmy Dale.
Okay, but don't come out. He's right by the door.
Luke walks away from the outhouse. Now, Jimmy Dale and Stacy drive away in their Buick, and the Chandlers smile as they wave goodbye. Trot stares blankly as they drive past the Spruill camp. The car cruises down the lane and pulls onto the main road. Luke walks out with a baseball, bat, and a glove. Eli grins at him.
You did some practice, Luke?
Yes, sir.
You be careful you don't bother the Mexicans.
And keep an eye out for them big, biting black snakes.
Jesse grins ear to ear.
That was a good one, Luke. Served her right.
Kathleen gives Luke a playful hug.
You little Dickens, come with me to the Latchers.
The Latchers were a family of sharecroppers who lived no more than a mile from our house. Their rundown shack contained a horde of little Latchers. They had no electricity. Mom's delivery was one part kindness and one part gossip.
Hello, Mrs. Chandler. I'm glad you're here. It's Libby. She's about to have the baby.
A baby?
Yes. She's in labor.
Well, we better get the doctor.
Oh, no, we can't do that. No one can know about this. No one. We've got to keep it quiet. We're so ashamed. She won't tell us who the father is, and right now I don't care. If the doctor comes, the whole county will know. We got to keep this quiet, Mrs. Chandler. Please, can you promise me?
I'll get Gran. She's done this many times.
Please, do. And hurry.
I'll be back in half an hour.
Kathleen rushes back to the truck. At the Chandler farm, Luke carries a bucket and a stool to a tan-colored milking cow. The boy takes a seat on the stool and squirts milk into the bucket. Looking over his shoulder, he spots Gran and Miguel approaching the truck. As Gran gets in next to Kathleen, Miguel loads a box into the back. Luke stands and watches with a curious gaze.
Miguel, could you please tell Jesse to watch Luke?
The two women drive away in the dirty old pickup truck. Luke watches, his brow furrowed.
Mom and Gran were up to something, but I didn't know what. I saw Tally over at the water pump and decided we could figure it out together.
Luke sneaks up behind Tally and covers her eyes.
Luke, what are you doing?
Promise you won't tell?
Promise.
Luke takes her hand and leads her away. On the porch, Eli spots the pair hurrying off. A smile wrinkles his cheeks and he chuckles to himself. Later, Luke and Tally walk across a yard toward the Latcher's shack. Clutching each other's hands, they slow their steps. As the kids move closer to the house, they crouch down and hurry to a window. They peer through the glass, past a small living room, into the open doorway of a bedroom. Gran tends to a girl on the bed. Kathleen approaches a man in the living room.
Mr. Latimer, you got those towels?
Here you go, ma'am.
She takes them and hurries back to the bedroom. Mrs. Latcher closes the door partway.
Okay, ready? Water! Push now. Push.
There it is! At the window, Luke's eyes widen. He gulps.
You're doing a couple more now.
As Mr. Latcher arrives with a bucket of water, he pushes the door open again. Gran stands between Libby's legs. Outside, Tally puts her arm around Luke's waist. Kathleen escorts Mr. Latcher out of the room and closes the door.
Okay, now push. Push. Push.
At the window, Tally stares. Luke tightens his lips.
It's coming! It's coming! You're doing great!
Good!
Mrs. Latcher opens the door.
It's a boy!
Gran holds the baby in her arms as Kathleen dabs his head with a towel. At the window, Luke smiles. Inside, Mr. Latcher takes a swig from a liquor bottle. Now, sunlight and shadow dance on white clapboard siding.
See this?
Luke runs his finger along it, staining the tip white.
Still fresh.
Someone's painting our house.
You know, I bet it's Trot. He's the only one who has the time, and he's here by the house all day with nothing to do. Wonder why he'd do such a thing.
Luke and his mom step away.
Where'd he get the paint?
It's a mystery.
Now in the cotton field, the workers drag their long sacks behind them as they pick the white fluffy plants. Luke works alongside his family, the Spruels, and the Mexicans. In the distance, behind them, a funnel forms from a dark cloud. A strong wind blows off Eli's hat and rustles the cotton plants. Luke's hat blows off too, and he looks up. The giant tornado swirls as it touches down. Kathleen puts her arms around her son. As hailstones pelt them, the cotton pickers toss aside their sacks and race toward the house. Eli takes Gran's arm and rushes her through the field. As they reach the farm, the Mexicans hurry into the barn. Kathleen and Jesse each put a hand on Luke's shoulders and urge him toward the house with the others. As rain pours down, the Chandlers reach their covered front porch. They look out at the massive twister. A dark cloud of dirt gathers at its tip as it moves along the ground beyond their fields.
Tornadoes were common in our part of Arkansas, and I've heard many stories about them. We watched the funnel in muted fascination, and as suddenly as it appeared, it was gone.
The tornado vanishes.
Hard work. I was awakened in the middle of the night. I crept toward my window and peered through the darkness.
Outside, a man throws a rock at the barn. Lightning flashes on his face.
And there was Hank, still angry and determined to torment Cowboy and the other Mexicans.
As Hank's gaze fixes on the house, Luke quickly climbs the ladder to his bunk. Outside, Hank walks away from the barn. Daytime. Tiny clouds of cotton dot the vast fields. Luke works alone between rows of cotton plants. The boy lifts his bag strap off his shoulder and crouches down. Crawling through the thin branches, he spots Tally and Cowboy sitting together.
Thank you very much.
Meg.
Tu también.
What does that mean?
You too. Eres muy bonita.
What does that mean?
You are very beautiful.
A black snake slithers toward Luke. The boy quickly crawls backwards, then gets to his feet and runs away. Tally and Cowboy notice the rustling plants and stand. Taking their sacks, they head in opposite directions. Now Luke and his mom drive across a river on a flat wooden bridge.
Mom, There's something I need to tell you.
What is it?
I think Tally and Cowboy like each other.
Oh, really? Now, how do you know this?
I caught them in the cotton patch.
What were they doing?
I don't know. But they were together. Do you think they were kissing?
Probably. Oh, well. I'll talk to your father about it.
Luke purses his lips and looks out his rain-spotted window. Now outside the Latcher's house, he and his mom exit the truck. Kathleen takes a basket of vegetables from the back, hands it to Luke, then lifts the second basket. As they carry them toward the house, Kathleen spots two girls by the barn.
Hi, girls.
As Luke follows his mom to the front porch, he notices three boys playing nearby.
Hi, Mrs. Chandler. Hi, Luke.
Hey.
Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome.
Mrs. Chandler.
How's the baby?
Oh, he's fine. I guess you want to see him.
Yes, I would.
Kathleen goes into the house with Mrs. Latcher and Libby. Luke approaches two boys about his age. The third older boy stalks toward them, glaring. His face is covered in dirt.
Luke.
Howdy, Piercy.
We're gonna whoop your behind, Luke.
Why?
Because you're a Chandler, and your Ricky did that to Libby.
It was my fault.
Percy shoves Luke into his younger brother. As Luke gets shoved back, he hits Percy in the stomach. Percy doubles over. Luke pushes him to the ground, then knocks a second Latcher boy off his feet. The two girls cower nearby as Percy holds Luke in a headlock. He props Luke against a tree and all three boys pound him. Their moms arrive.
Stop! What in the world?
They pry the boys apart.
Luke, are you all right?
Cut me a switch! What do you mean beating up on a little boy like that? He ain't done nothing. I want you to watch this.
No, Darla, we're leaving.
What was that all about?
Well, what Ricky did to Libby.
We don't know that for sure.
Kathleen quickly ushers her son back to the truck. Later, Eli drives the tractor down a muddy path, hauling the cotton pickers on a flatbed. Luke watches the tractor pull to a stop and the workers get off. A piece of bloody cloth is shoved up one of his nostrils. As Jesse, Eli, and Grant approach him, Kathleen arrives.
You're not going to believe what happened. Three of them jumped Luke, the little criminals. We're taking food over, and they pull a stunt like this.
Three. Didn't run away, did you?
No, he did not. He was kicking and clawing just as much as they were.
You land a good punch?
They were all crying when I left.
Say there were three of them, huh? Well, good for you, boy. It'll make it tough.
No, I think it's broken.
You okay, Luke?
Yep.
Come on, let's get you out of those muddy clothes.
Oh, no. Come on, champ. Come on.
Jesse hoists Luke onto his shoulders, and they all crowd around him. Later, Luke walks through the barn and approaches Tally, her towels draped over her shoulder.
Where are you going?
I don't know. Just walking.
Going to the creek?
Cowboy spots them and leaves.
You'd like that, wouldn't you? Not this time. I'm not bathing. It's just to sit on.
Clutching the towel, Tally heads through the barn as Cowboy descends from the loft. Luke approaches his parents. His head hung low, he takes a seat near his mom. She looks up from mending a sock and gazes sympathetically at her son. As Jesse removes a tire from the tractor, Eli approaches.
Jesse, how much did Hank pick today?
Under 200. Say 190.
He was picking 400 a week ago. I've got a good mind to drive into town tomorrow, find Stick Powers, tell him I'm done with the boy.
Mexicans are saying somebody's still throwing rocks at the barn at night.
Well, it seems to me the thing to do is tell Mr. Spruill that Stick is coming after Hank. Let the boys sneak away at night. He'll be gone. That's all that matters. Mr. Spruill will be thankful you kept him from getting arrested.
Jesse looks from Grand to Eli. Smiling, the old man points to his wife and nods. Later, in town, Eli and Luke exit the truck outside the co-op. Luke follows his grandfather down the sidewalk.
Pappy? We don't pass the co-op.
Mr. Watson wants to see you.
They enter the general store.
Yep, Luke. Come here. I'm going to show you something.
Mr. Watson shows Luke to a chair among a dozen old farmers. It faces a black and white TV.
It's World Series.
I don't have to tell you.
Game 3, Dodgers at Yankee Stadium.
Big game, this is, for these crosstown rivals.
Who you pulling for?
I don't know. Dodgers, I guess.
You always got to pull for the National League.
Eli winks. On the TV, the batter hits the ball.
Wow, he got under all of that one. And it's a high arching strike towards the right field wall.
Yeah.
It's drifting back, back.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Luke grins, his eyes fixed on the tiny screen. Later on the sidewalk, Eli chats with a few old farmers.
Had some heavy rains up in North County last night. 6 inches. You don't tell them when they're going to be able to get wagons in them fields.
My cousin in Oklahoma got flooded out.
As Luke reads a paper nearby, Tally and Trot approach with two paint cans.
Hey, Luke. Hey, Tally. I just saw the World Series on the television.
I'm going to have a television of my own someday.
What's the paint for?
Oh, nothing.
Trot grins sheepishly and Tally hurries him off. As Luke watches them go, Eli approaches.
Let's go, Luke.
At the farm, Jesse talks with Mr. Sproul.
Dick told me he's coming out here to take Hank.
I'll talk to him.
I probably better if he heads out.
Well, like I say, I'll talk to him.
As Mr. Sproul heads back to his tent, Jesse approaches Eli.
How'd they take it?
Well, they need the money.
They say that old Sheriff Dick's coming to get you.
I ain't afraid of that dumb sheriff.
But you don't want to get arrested.
I didn't do nothing.
The Chandlers want you to leave.
Oh, I got more money in my pocket than them sod busters will ever have.
Just go on back home now, son. Let things cool down.
Come on, I'll be best.
All right, I'll leave.
Hank storms off. Later, Luke walks toward the bridge. As he reaches it, his steps slow and he peers through the trees to the bank below. At the water's edge, Tally and Cowboy kiss. Frowning, Luke shifts on his feet. As the lovers continue in their passionate embrace, Luke sneaks closer and crouches behind a tree. Ending their kiss, Cowboy takes Tally's hands in his. Luke watches the couple giddily swing their arms. As Tally moves in for another kiss, Hank arrives on the bridge above. He stops and glares at the couple.
What's going on here?
Startled, Tally faces her brother.
None of your business, Hank.
Going home?
Tally shakes her head.
You heard him. Get on out of here, or I'll tell Ma and Pa what you're doing. Go home.
The cowboy sends her off and heads for the bridge.
Come on up here, brown skin. I'm fixing to teach you something.
Cowboy races up the sloping bank to the bridge. He faces Hank, who holds a 3-foot stick.
Now I'm going to settle your hash once and for all.
Using the stick, he knocks off Cowboy's hat and nudges his shoulder.
You like my sister, Mexicano? Huh?
Cowboy grabs the stick and pushes Hank away. As Hank swings it at him, Cowboy ducks and scrambles behind him.
You're a slippery little wetback, ain't you?
Hank jabs him in the gut. Cowboy collapses. As Hank raises the stick to strike another blow, Cowboy stands and punches him in the stomach. Luke watches anxiously as Hank whacks Cowboy's face with the stick. Cowboy charges, wrapping his arms around Hank's middle. Hank pounds on his opponent's back. Cowboy lands an uppercut, then falls. He dodges another blow from the stick and punches Hank. The brawny hillbilly drops to the bridge. Glaring, he gets up and spits. As Cowboy rests on his hands and knees, Hank comes up behind him and holds the stick horizontally against his throat. Cowboy reaches back and pulls Hank's hair. They both let go. As Hank continues striking at Cowboy, the Mexican reaches into his back pocket and retrieves his switchblade. With one swift move, he jabs it into Hank's gut. Hank stumbles, his mouth hanging agape. Cowboy lets him fall to the ground. Staggering, Cowboy wipes the blade on his pants and steps away from the body. He takes the stick and chucks it away from the bridge. Luke watches Cowboy pick up a handful of leaves by Hank's body. He throws them into the water, then pockets his knife. Looking anxiously from side to side, Cowboy bends down to Hank. He rolls him to the edge of the bridge and pushes him off. With a duffel bag slung onto his back, Hank's lifeless body drops into the muddy river below. it floats under the bridge, Luke's gaze darts from the body to Cowboy. The young man slowly straightens and looks from side to side, slack-jawed. He staggers across the bridge, picks up his hat, and puts it on. In the brush, Luke quickly starts to leave. Cowboy grabs him from behind. Kneeling, he clutches Luke's collar.
Come here.
He holds the switchblade up to Luke's lips.
Silence. You've been to the river?
Luke shakes his head.
Then where have you been? You speak one word of this to anyone, and I will kill your mother. Understand?
Luke nods.
No matter. You tell them next year. You tell them when I'm gone. I will come back, and I will kill your mother.
Luke stares frightfully into Cowboy's wild eyes. The murderer takes off. Now at the breakfast table, Jesse comes up behind his son.
You okay, Luke? Didn't eat enough to feed a bird.
Just tired.
Tonight you go to bed early, okay?
Jesse stares out a rain-streaked window. He turns to his father.
Any reason the truck would be gone?
Say what?
The adults head out to the porch.
Truck's gone.
I left it right here.
Where was the key?
By the radio, same as always.
We lost Tally. I can't find her no place.
Can she drive a truck?
No, she can't.
Don't suppose Hank took it.
Hank would not steal your truck.
Hank's halfway home by now.
We better go check the barn for Cowboy.
Miguel and two of the Mexicans approach.
Morning, Miguel.
Señor.
There a problem?
Sí, señor. Little problem.
What is it?
Cowboy is gone.
Must be contagious.
You think he took her?
I don't know what to think.
He took my baby?
We need to get a law on this.
I'm going to go unhook the truck from the tent.
Jesse will go with you.
Mr. Squirrel waves Jesse toward his tent. Luke bolts from his seat and starts after his father. Kathleen holds him back.
No, Luke, honey. It's not your place.
In the pouring rain, Mr. Squirrel and Jesse get in the Squirrel's pickup truck and drive off. As Luke looks out after them, his mother gently runs her hand through his hair. Later, the rain continues to fall heavily on the river. Luke and Eli walk out to the bridge.
When the weather didn't let up, Pappy got concerned that the rain would swell the river. It would be flooded out.
Eli stops his grandson midway across the bridge. They look at the murky brown water below. Eli motions for Luke to stay put and heads down to the bank.
But there was a secret part of me that prayed the river would rise and wash everything away.
Eli moves quickly down the wooded slope. As he reaches the river's edge, his steps slow to a halt. He finds a stick on the ground and picks it up. Luke's eyes widen. It's the 3-foot stick Hank used as a weapon. Eli steps closer to the river until his feet are ankle deep in mud. He carefully pushes one end of the stick into the river, and the water reaches halfway up its side. Eli looks up at Luke.
We'll check it later.
Luke closes his eyes and lets his shoulders relax. A straw hat covers his shaggy brown hair as he peers down at the river. Now on a clear day, huge puddles cover the dirt drive leading up to the house. Eli's truck turns onto the road, followed by a police car. As the two vehicles slowly make their way up to the house, Jesse steps onto the front porch and meets them. The sheriff pulls the truck to a stop in front of Jesse. Eli and the Sproles approach a stick outside the driver's seat.
Found it in the bus station over in Jonesboro. Where's the key?
Under the seat. And it had a full tank of gas. I don't know if it had a full one when it left here, but it's full now.
It's half empty.
They must have just borrowed.
That's the way I see it. You still want to press charges?
I guess not.
Luke watches from inside the house.
Did anybody see him?
They bought 2 tickets to Chicago. When the bus got loaded, they both got on and sat together.
What time did the bus leave?
6 this morning.
He holds a note.
Found this on the front seat. It's a note from Tally to y'all. I ain't read it.
Mrs. Sproul puts on a pair of glasses and reads the note.
Ain't none of my business, ma'am, but if there's any useful information, I'd need to know.
She says she ain't coming home. She says she and Cowboy are getting married. Gonna live up north, where they can find good jobs and such.
You gonna stay in Chicago?
Don't say. Just says up north.
Blinking back tears, Mrs. Sproul walks away. Her husband follows. Luke watches Eli and Jesse escort Stick back to the police car.
Thanks, Stick. Bringing the truck back. Much obliged.
Oh, ain't nothing. Say, Eli. Where's that big one, Hank? He took off for home. Well, I'm going to call the sheriff up in Eureka Springs. I ain't through with him, you know. When I find him, I'm going to put him in the jail in Jonesboro, and we're going to have us that trial.
Yeah, you do that, Stick.
With his deputy beside him, Stick starts the car.
Although there were occasional clear days, the news was somber and threatening. Heavy rains had hit Clay County, north of us. The creeks and streams were flooded up there and pouring into the river. The water was rising.
Luke, Jesse, and Eli approach the river. The water level quickly submerges the entire 3-foot Stick. Now at the Chandler home, the Sprouls pack their belongings into the trailer behind the truck. The Chandlers approach.
Well, ground's too soft, cotton's too wet. Guess they've had enough.
Trot takes a brush off the lid of a paint can. Luke steps closer, hooking his thumbs on the pockets of his overalls. Trot shuffles toward him. Shifting his jaw, he hands Luke the paintbrush.
Over here.
He retrieves a paint can from the trailer, and his brother grabs another one. They present them to Luke.
It's for you. Tally bought it.
Thanks.
Trot grins, then hugs Luke's head to his chest. The hillbilly boy walks off, sadly averting his gaze. Mr. Sproul steps over the hitch of the trailer and heads into the driver's seat of his pickup truck. His wife sits beside him. The Chandlers watch the pickup head down the road. Trot sits hunched over on the trailer, his feet dangling off the back. He looks up and smiles. Now, Luke carries the two paint cans around the side of his house and sets them down in front of the partially painted wall. A rusty vent fan rotates in one of the windows. Our view watches Luke through the spinning rotor blades as he sizes up the wall. Later, his father reinforces a wooden plank set up between a ladder and a barrel. As Kathleen pries open one of the paint cans, Jesse hoists his son up to the plank. Kathleen sets the open paint can on the ladder's top step, and Luke dunks a brush inside. He paints a white streak across one of the wall's clapboards.
How am I doing?
Oh, it's beautiful, Luke. Just go slow and take your time. And don't fall.
I'm not gonna fall.
Now, dark clouds roll across the sky. In the cotton field, Luke drags his sack to a muddy access road. Near the tractor, two Mexican workers straighten out a green tarp and drape it over the Chandler's truck. As Luke moves around them, he flips and falls on his back. Nearby, Eli and Jesse watch Miguel weigh his cotton sack.
Picked near 1,100 pounds between us.
Now the rain starts driving the prices up.
Yeah, a few more dry days, we're clear.
Luke drags a sack to his grandfather's side. As it starts to rain, the workers quickly cover the picked cotton with the tarp.
Luke.
Jesse places his son on the truck bed beneath the tarp. As he and Eli secure the corners with rope, Grant and Kathleen run over, sopping wet. Miguel helps the two women onto the truck bed, then tosses filled cotton sacks onto the road underneath. Eli and Jesse join their family under the tarp while the Mexicans sit below them on the sacks. The workers sit idly as rainwater cascades off the saggy tarp. Now at the general store, Jesse pays Mr. Watson. Kathleen helps her husband load 5 paint cans and 2 brushes into a cardboard box. At the side of the Chandler house, Luke continues painting the wall white.
The rains had forced us all to kill long hours in and around the house. Even on days when the sun tried to break through the clouds, the cotton was too wet and the ground was too soft. The Mexicans were delighted to have something to do, and we all attacked the unpainted house with a vengeance.
Later, 4 Mexican workers join Luke on the elevated planks, which now extend along most of the wall. One worker paints a window frame. Another dips his brush into a can and applies a second coat to a clapboard. Later still, Jesse and Kathleen admire the paint job, which now stretches from corner to corner. Luke sits on a worker's shoulders as he paints. Jesse helps his wife up to one of the planks, and she joins in the effort. Dusk. Eli checks out the wall, which is almost completely white. Kathleen stands on a ladder, painting the uppermost boards as Gran offers the workers drinks. Luke sits on a crate near his grandfather, watching the others work. Daytime. In the sunlit cotton fields, Luke rides on the tractor with Eli.
Happy, if I told you a secret, would you promise not to tell anybody else?
Let's try it out.
Hank is dead. Cowboy killed him. With a knife of his. I saw it all. Hank saw Cowboy and Tally together.
Tally see this too?
No, sir.
Luke faces his grandfather.
Cowboy sent her away.
Eli glances at him.
They fought at the bridge. Hank landed in the middle of the river, and he never came back up.
Eli shakes his head.
You should have told me then.
I just couldn't.
Cowboy see you?
Luke nods.
What are we gonna do, Pappy?
Killed their son and stole their daughter. My, oh my.
Are we gonna tell anybody?
Nope, I don't think so. Nothing we can say is going to bring that boy back, and telling folks to just make a fuss none of us need.
Well, what about Mr. and Mrs. Sproul?
It'd only hurt them if they knew. We ain't telling nobody. Just be our secret. One we take to our graves, just you and me. But you done right telling me. Don't you worry none. I'll handle this.
He sees his grandson's troubled expression.
Hey, don't worry.
Eli faces forward.
I'll handle.
He glances at the ground.
So are the banks. It's flooding.
Later in town, Luke and his father cross a wet street toward Watson's general store. They cut between 2 pickup trucks filled with people and supplies. Inside the store, Mr. Watson faces Jesse and Luke from behind a counter.
4 cans of paint, coming right up.
Luke faces his father.
That's not enough.
That'll do for now.
That'll be $10 plus tax of 36 cents.
Well, looks like I just brought 10 with me. I'll bring in the tax next time.
Well, sure, Jesse.
I'm gonna go talk to Riggs. You help Mr. Watson put this paint in the truck. Back in a few minutes.
Jesse leaves.
How much is 2 gallons?
$2.50 a gallon. Total of $5.
Luke pulls money from his pocket and hands some to Mr. Watson.
Here's 5.
The store owner leans down to the boy.
You pick cotton for that money?
Yes, sir.
Well, does your daddy know you're buying paint?
Not yet.
What are y'all painting out there?
Our house.
Well, why are you doing that?
Because it ain't never been painted before.
Plus 18 cents for tax. You got that?
How much does my daddy owe you for tax?
36 cents.
Luke gives him more money.
Take it from this.
All right.
Now outside the Chandler house, Luke and the Mexican workers paint a side wall starting near the front. Later, the painters work on the midsection of the wall. Kathleen carries out a tray of drinks. Now the workers paint the wall near the far end of the house. One sits on another's shoulders. Later, Luke stands back from the completed white wall, his hands on his hips. His mother joins him.
Very good job, Luke. How much paint is left?
None. It's all gone.
How much you need to paint the front?
I reckon 4 or 5 gallons.
I don't want you to spend your own money on paint.
It's my money. Y'all said I could spend it on whatever I wanted.
What about your jacket?
Maybe Santa Claus will bring you one.
Oh, maybe so. You ready for some lunch?
Yep.
All right.
As she leads her son toward the house, Jesse steps out from behind the screen door.
Backwater's trickling across the main road into the back 40.
Luke glances up at his mother and purses his lips. Later, the Chandlers cross through the barn to the cotton fields. The women wear galoshes. The others stay back while Eli moves through the rows of white fluffy crops. He trudges through ankle-high water.
Miguel, trágame todos muchachos. Todos hombres, aquí.
Miguel leads the other Mexican workers out to the field.
Marca la línea para agua, por favor.
Hay una fila marcando donde termina el agua.
It's here. 2 inches of it.
Jesse, Gran, Luke, and Kathleen join them in the field. Staring at the ground, Jesse circles his father. Luke sticks the cotton stalk into the flooded soil and watches the water level rise around it. He eyes his father, who shakes his head.
Cotton's wet.
The sun breaks. Maybe can get 100 pounds each. Jesse, going into town, check on the co-op. See if there's another farm or the Mexicans might get work.
Jesse passes his son as he heads toward the barn. Eli shrugs. Luke and the two women follow Jesse.
This cotton's so heavy, we're going to get 50 pounds. It's a waste of time.
Can I go to town? Well, yeah, we need more paint.
What foolishness. Spending good money on house paint when we're losing another crop.
Can't leave the house half and half. Got to finish the job.
Facing Miguel, Eli shakes his head.
We must trabajo aquí. Lo siento.
The Mexican workers stand in a circle around Eli. Now, dark clouds fill the sky. Inside, Kathleen lies with her son on his bunk bed.
I have a secret for you. Can you keep a secret?
Sure.
Your daddy and I are thinking about going up north.
What about me?
Well, you're going too.
What about Pappy and Graham?
They're going to be okay.
Luke rests his head on his mother's arm.
It's going to be exciting, Luke. Trust me. It'll be an adventure.
She kisses his forehead.
Okay.
As she climbs down the ladder, she playfully nudges her son's leg.
Get in that bag.
Luke tucks himself in under the covers. Standing in the doorway, Kathleen shuts off the light.
Night.
Night.
She closes the door and walks off. Daytime. Luke rides with his father as he drives the pickup truck down a muddy road to the bridge. The river flows inches below the flat wooden planks. Jesse stops the truck.
Reckon it's safe?
I sure hope so.
He shifts the truck into gear and pulls forward. Now at a soda fountain, a waitress makes an ice cream soda. She hands the glass to a red-headed man sitting at the counter. Luke and Jesse sit on either side of him.
Hey, Jesse.
Jackie.
The two men shake hands. Jackie faces Luke.
Now, little Chandler, what could possibly bring you here?
Ice cream.
It's Sunday for the boys, isn't it?
Y'all picking out there?
Creek came over last night. Moved more than half a mile before sunrise. Lower Ford is gone.
Jackie shakes his head.
Yeah, all the creeks are backing up. Just putting a lot of pressure on the St. Francis.
You know someone who needs any Mexicans? We've got six of them now. Nothing to do. Ready to go home.
The waitress slides Luke an ice cream sundae.
I think Riggs might know some farmers up north of Blyville. They might take them.
Thanks, Jackie. Mm-hmm.
As Luke eats his ice cream, Jackie sips his soda. Now a large puddle sits beside a patch of cotton plants. The Chandlers stand on the other side, their reflections cast in the muddy water. They stare out at the cotton fields, which now resemble a swamp. Floodwaters stretch to the horizon. Now in the Chandler house, Luke sets two jars of red sauce on a pantry shelf. At the kitchen table, Graham peels tomatoes while Kathleen grinds them into a strainer. Luke circles the table to a seat beside his grandmother.
I had another dream last night that Ricky came home. It was windy, and he was standing out on the road in the wind. And he made it just in time for Christmas.
Kathleen gently squeezes her mother-in-law's shoulder. Gran wipes her hands on a towel, then gets up and answers the door. Mr. Latcher stands on the porch as his family stands gathered in and around a pickup truck.
Mr. Latcher!
Excuse me, ma'am. I need to speak to Mr. Chandler.
Now, he's in the barn. What is it?
We've been flooded out. Water's up past the porch and in the house. Can you help us? We ain't got no place to go.
Of course we can help. You folks can stay here. The loft is clean. The Mexicans just left. You'll have a warm bed and plenty of food. Let's get a move on. We'll get the loft ready.
Kathleen and Luke follow them out to the Latcher's truck. Two of the boys stand wrapped in a soaking wet blanket.
Come on, let's go get dry.
Later.
Come on, honey.
Now, after you get dressed, you run down to the kitchen and get something to eat.
In the barn, Kathleen dresses a Latcher boy.
They ain't much, but they're dry. Someone's been in the family for generations.
Luke sits near Libby, who tends to her baby in a bassinet.
What's his name?
Don't have one yet.
When's Ricky coming home? I don't know.
Luke tickles the infant's face. Later, he and his mother carry baskets of vegetables through their waterlogged garden.
Say goodbye to the Mexicans?
Yes, ma'am. Does that mean we're done picking cotton?
Sure looks like it.
Why does our land flood so quick?
Because it's low and close to the river. It's just not very good land, Luke. That's one reason why we're leaving here.
How long are we going to be up north?
Not long. We'll stay until we save some money.
When we come back, what are we going to do?
Well, we're not going to farm.
Smiling, Luke nods.
We'll get a job in Memphis, a Little Rock. And we'll buy us a house with a television and a telephone. And we'll have a nice car in the driveway, and you can play baseball on a team that has really uniforms. How's that sound to you?
Sounds pretty good.
We'll always come back and visit Pappy and Gran and Ricky. But be a new life, Luke.
The boy nods. Later at the dinner table, he eats a forkful of peas. Eli gazes at the family.
The crop loans can be rolled over to next spring. And the other bills can be put off, too. I hate the thought of riding those I owe, but...
How do we get through the winter?
We've got plenty of food, but what about gasoline and electricity and oil for the truck?
About a third of the crop's still out there standing in water. Weather breaks, we might be able to salvage a bit of it. It'll get us some money.
Well, Jen will take most of that.
Jesse keeps his gaze lowered as his wife chews her food.
Jim and Dale is holding a job for me at the Buick plant.
But he can't wait long. Jobs are tight right now, so we need to get on up there.
He says I can make as much as $200 a week.
We'll send home as much as we can.
But we gotta leave day after tomorrow.
Lips pursed, Graham faces her husband. Eli's melancholy gaze shifts toward his grandson.
Eat your food, son.
The old man's head lowers. Jesse sips his drink while the rest of the family sits still. Now Eli drives his tractor through the flooded cotton fields. Luke sits beside him. Water submerges a third of the vehicle's massive tires. Eli stops the tractor and looks past his grandson.
You'll be leaving tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
She'll be coming back soon.
Yes, sir.
Been thinking more about Hank, cowboy. Just leave it be like we agreed. Can't nothing good come from telling nobody. It's our secret.
He holds out his hand.
Deal?
Luke shakes it.
Deal.
Eli stares off into the distance.
Don't forget about your pappy up there. You hear?
Eli puts his arm around his grandson, who hugs him tightly. Now on the front porch, the Latchers and the Chandlers sit around the radio. Kathleen darns a sock. Libby hands her baby to Gran. As Libby walks off, she motions to Luke with her head. He follows her.
Luke, I've written Ricky a letter to tell him all about the baby. Do you have his address?
Yeah, I got it.
Do you have an envelope?
Sure.
Could you mail my letter for me? Please, Luke, I don't think Ricky knows about the baby.
I guess I can mail it.
Thank you, Luke.
She gives him a hug, then discreetly pulls a letter out of her dress pocket and hands it over. Luke stuffs it into his jacket pocket and they return to the porch. Later in the kitchen, Luke eats a bowl of cereal. He peers out the screen door at his father and grandfather who chat near a tractor trailer. Gran carries a platter of biscuits from the stove to the table and musses her grandson's hair. Hugging him from behind, she kisses the side of his head.
Don't come back here talking like a Yankee.
She kisses his forehead, then walks off, wiping her nose. Later outside, Kathleen holds Gran's arm.
No.
Jesse carries out two suitcases.
I'm just gonna miss you so much.
The two women hug as Jesse loads the suitcases into the back of the pickup truck. Eli walks around to the front of the vehicle, where Luke stares at the last unpainted section of the house.
Good job, Luke.
Eli sits on the pickup's bumper facing his grandson.
You've done a good job.
Luke shrugs.
Just wish we'd finished.
Yeah. I figure another gallon?
Yes, sir. That's about right.
I'll get it done this winter.
Thanks, Pappy.
When you all come home, it'll be finished.
Not like that.
Let's shake on it.
They shake hands. Luke hugs his grandfather, who smiles and pats his back. The boy shuts his eyes tight and holds on. Later, Jesse, Luke, and Kathleen sit beside Eli in the pickup as he drives them away. Luke peers out the back window at his grandmother, who stands near the front porch waving.
When we pulled away, Gran was standing by the front porch, wiping her face. My father told me not to cry, but I couldn't help it. My heart ached. But at the same time, I knew our adventure was just beginning.
Fade to black. Now our view looks out on the dry cotton field. A soldier appears among the waist-high stalks, carrying a duffel bag over his shoulder. Nearby, Luke emerges from the field wearing the red Cardinals baseball jacket.
And I hoped when I returned one day, my Uncle Ricky would be coming home too. Just like in Gran's dreams.
In slow motion, they step toward each other.
We would be a complete family again.
Ricky picks up Luke in his arms and swings him around. Setting the boy down, he puts his arm around his shoulder. They walk toward us, smiling. Now the Chandler house sits among tall, leafy trees. The white paint completely covers its modest clapboard siding.